from deep inside your radio.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I have to say, first of all, that in the now 29-plus years that I've been doing this program, I think this is a first. I think I've never really done a live radio broadcast fighting off a migraine. And what scares me is this: if this show is better than normal, you see what I'm saying? Anyway, perhaps what helped give me the migraine was watching the Sunday morning Yak shows as the fiscal cliff conversation reaches absolute peak absurdity. And if those of you listening did not hear the interview, I guess, 3 weeks ago with Dr. Stephanie Kelton on the subject of debt and deficit in this modern economy, the transcript of it is at harryshearer.com. It'll make you giggle when you hear Erskine Bowles, for example, from the bipartisan Simpson-Bowles Commission, when you read the little type under his name when he appeared on one of the Yak shows this morning. He's from Campaign to Fix the Debt, founded by Pete Peterson. Look it up. Look up the Peterson Foundation. Figure it out. Apropos of which, one of the, the internet can be the source of wisdom and it can be the source of great tomfoolery, and it's up to us as consumers to decide which. One of the ideas that's been floating around for at least the last 2 years as the debt discussion kept lurching forward and then being beaten back with a stick from time to time was the idea that apparently, according to those who've checked it out, the Constitution, you remember that? Yeah, I know, it's hard these days. The Constitution provides that the United States government, the Treasury Department specifically, is allowed to issue a coin, a platinum coin, in any denomination, as the Secretary of Treasury sees fit. Yes, theoretically that means Secretary of the Treasury could order a platinum coin minted equal to the amount of the current national debt, deposit it at the Federal Reserve, and then write checks against it, and there you go. Whoopsie. Now, that, as I say, been floating around the internet. It made the mainstream cable television world this week, which proves only that it proves only that they were desperate for something to talk about this week. No, it may, it, you know, who knows? As you will hear later in this broadcast, some ideas that have circulated around the internet that sound really great turn out to have holes in them. This may too, but anyway, there. Make your pockets ready for the big platinum coin to come. Ladies and gentlemen, back to more verifiable material here on the big oil in the Gulf. Remember that? I know. It's hard. The Deepwater Horizon spill, widely considered one of, if not the worst environmental disasters in American history. The cleanup continues to this day. The Gulf slowly returns to its former self. This report is from oilprice.com. Researchers from the Georgia Institute of Technology and the Universidad Autónoma de Aguascalientes, thank you, have discovered that the chemical dispersants used to treat the oil and break it down have actually increased the toxicity of the oil by as much as 55 times. That was being rumored about on the internet for a while. Now, apparently, research validates that fear. Over 2 million gallons of dispersants have been released to mix with the oil in an attempt to break up the oil slick and clean up the ocean. That's right. Dump more crap in it to clean it up. You see what I'm saying? No, it made the oil less visible. We know that. However, tests have found that the mixed oil and chemical dispersant fluid vastly increases the mortality rates of rotifers, the microscopic plankton-like animals, who knew, that form the base of the Gulf's food chain. Rotifers. Roberto Rico Martinez of the UAA said that dispersants are pre-approved to help clean up oil spills and are widely used during disasters, but we have a poor understanding of their toxicity. Our study indicates the increase in toxicity may have greatly been underestimated following the Macondo well explosion. The other scientists and Martinez hope that further investigation into the effects of the dispersants on the oil and marine life should be carried out in order to understand and manage future spills more effectively. Like, make them less toxic, not more? Really? You think? And, ladies and gentlemen, You've heard about drones. Well, you've heard about the drones that we have over Yemen, over Pakistan, picking off the bad guys, they like to say. You know, I'm old enough that I remember when people used to laugh at folks in movies talking about the good guys and bad guys. Yeah, I know. That old. Anyway, you may have heard that there is a push to civilianize drones for American airspace to be used by, I don't know, police departments, radio stations, doing pranks, whatever you like. You may wonder why. The Hearst Washington Bureau and Center for Responsive Politics have reported on this. The federal government is rushing to open America's skies to tens of thousands of drones, pushed to do so by a law that was championed by, guesses? You are correct, sir. Manufacturers of drones. The 60-member House of Representatives Drone Caucus, imagine that, has helped push that agenda. And over the last 4 years, caucus members have drawn nearly $8 million in drone-related campaign contributions. Those are unmanned dollars flying into their wallets. The FAA has been flooded with applications from police departments, universities, and private corporations, all seeking to use drones that range from devices the size of a hummingbird to full-sized aircraft, like those used in Pakistan. So, yes, once again, the answer to any question about why something happens in the United States of America is money, darling. Hello, welcome to the show.
Half of what I say is meaningless, but I say it just to reach you, Julia. 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 Ocean child. Sing the song of love, Julia. Julia. Seashell eyes, windy smile calls me. So I sing the song of love, Julia. Sky is shimmering, glimmering in the sun. Julia, Julia, morning moon, touch me. So sing the song of love, Julia. When I cannot sing my heart, I can only speak my mind.
From Le Show World Headquarters, the Le Show Dome, in the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer. Welcome you to that very same show. And now, ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. From FierceCable.com, trade website of the cable industry, FierceCable.com, Verizon patents targeted advertising method that determines if viewers are laughing, cuddling, sleeping, or singing. I'll read it to you. Or for you. Yes, it's for you. Verizon has filed a patent application for targeting ads to viewers based on information collected from infrared cameras and microphones that would be able to detect conversations, people, objects, and even animals that are near a TV. Doris, are you watching? Wouldn't you like some kibble right about now? If this detection system determines that a couple is arguing, a service provider would be able to send an ad for marriage counseling to a TV or mobile device in the room. If the couple utters words that indicate they're cuddling, they would receive ads for, quote, a romantic getaway vacation, a commercial for a contraceptive, a commercial for flowers, or commercials for romantic movies, Verizon states in the patent application. For years, technology executives have discussed the possibility of using devices such as Microsoft's Xbox cameras to target advertising and programming to viewers, taking advantage of the ability to determine whether an adult or child is viewing a program. No, you can't tell by what kind of program it is, obviously. Not in this country. But Verizon is looking at taking targeted advertising to a new level with its patent application, titled Methods and Systems for Presenting an Advertisement Associated with an Ambient Action of a User. Who's using the user? Similar to the way Google targets ads to Gmail users based on the content of their emails, what? Verizon proposes scanning conversations of viewers that are within a, quote, detection zone near their TV, including telephone conversations. Quote, if detection facility detects one or more words spoken by a user, e.g. while talking to another user within the same room or on the telephone, advertising facility may utilize the one or more words spoken by the user to search for and or select an advertisement associated with one or more words, Verizon states in the patent application. Verizon says the sensors would also be able to determine if a viewer is exercising, eating, laughing, singing, or playing a musical instrument, and target ads to viewers based on their mood. It could also use sensors to determine what type of pets or inanimate objects are in the room. Quote, if detection facility detects that a user is playing with a dog, advertising facility may select an advertisement associated with dogs, a flea treatment, for example, Verizon writes in the patent application. Several types of sensors could be linked to the targeted advertising system, including 3D imaging devices, thermographic cameras, and microphones, according to the patent application. Verizon also details how it may be able to link smartphones and tablet computers that viewers are using to the detection system. Quote, if detection facility detects that the user is holding a mobile device, advertising facility may be configured to communicate with the mobile device to direct the mobile device to present the selected advertisement. Accordingly, not only may the selected advertisement be specifically targeted to the user, but may also be delivered right to the user's hands. Unquote, the patent application. Why stop at the hands? We got so many other body parts to work with. The targeted advertising system is one of the innovations that Verizon could potentially develop through a joint innovation lab it has created with Comcast, Time Warner Cable, and other helpful folks. Officials at Verizon declined to comment about the patent application. What are you scared of, guys? Just proof that the detection facility and the advertising facility should be friends. That's one of the thoughts that occurs to me when I read the trades for you. Copyrighted feature of this broadcast. No, it's not a frightening world we live in. It's a delightful wonderland. What the frack, ladies and gentlemen? What the frack, you may be asking, as companies rush to develop facilities, not detection facilities or advertising facilities, but drilling facilities to hydraulically fracture shale formations and thereby capture the natural gas released therefrom. Well, there's a lot of controversy about fracking, as you know, a lot of controversy about whether the wastewater contains toxic chemicals. The companies involved maintain that the chemicals they inject into these shale formations, they can't reveal the names of the chemicals because they're trade secrets, don't you know, even though they end up in the water that has to go somewhere, if we don't want to run out of water, that is. But there have been academic studies proving that fracking doesn't do any harm. Here's one. The long-awaited review of a controversial study on the drilling process known as fracking was released this week, finding numerous errors and flaws with how the study was conducted and released, as well as University of Texas policies for disclosing conflicts of interest. The head author of the study into fracking, Dr. Charles Chip Grote, has retired because of the controversy. And the head of the Energy Institute that released it, Dr. Raymond Orbach, has resigned as head of the institute, the university announced this week. The original report by UT Austin's Energy Institute, quote, fact-based regulation for environmental protection in the shale gas development, unquote, was released earlier this year and claimed that there was no link between fracking and water contamination. But this summer, the Public Accountability Initiative, a watchdog group, reported that the head of the study, UT Professor Chip Grote, had been sitting on the board of a drilling company the entire time. On the board of a drilling company, don't you know? His compensation totaled over $1.5 million over the last 5 years. That prompted the university to announce an independent review of the study a month later. That was released this week. The review finds many problems with the original study, chief among them that Grote did not disclose what it calls a clear conflict of interest, which, quote, severely diminished the study. The study was originally commissioned as a way to correct what it called controversies over fracking because of media reports. Ironically, it ended up as a lightning rod itself for failing to disclose conflicts of interest and for lacking scientific rigor. That is the second academic study to be put in the trash can of history by such a conflict of interest. The other one was University of Michigan, Michigan State, one of the Michigans. So it's a thing now that may cause us all to ask one more time. What the frack? And now, ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are proud to present Let Us Try, a ballad of the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers.
Let us try to stem the tide.
I didn't know tides had stems. Ladies and gentlemen, news of the United States Army Corps of Engineers.
We offer you our hand. Let us try.
When they offer you their hand, you know what to do. The Supreme Court ruled this week that the federal government is not automatically exempt from paying for damage caused by temporary flooding from government-owned dams. The court sided with Arkansas's Game and Fish Commission in its appeal of a lower court ruling that said the feds did not have to pay for damage to thousands of trees after the Army Corps of Engineers released more water than usual from its dam on the Black River. The release of additional water benefited farmers, but the commission said the hardwood forest suffered significant damage. It said the damage amounted to the government taking its property, for which compensation would be covered and owed under the Fifth Amendment of the Constitution. The Court of Federal Claims agreed, ordered the government to pay $5.6 million for destroyed and damaged trees. The U.S. Court of Appeals said damage resulting from temporary as opposed to permanent or inevitable flooding cannot be compensated. But Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, writing for the Supreme Court, said the appeals court was mistaken. She said the government-induced flooding of limited duration but severe impact can amount to a taking of property warranting just compensation, unquote. If trees, why not homes and families, one might ask, in the wake of the Corps' culpability found by a federal judge in another case in the 2005 New Orleans flooding disaster. That case, the latter one, still on appeal. And speaking of New Orleans and the Army Corps of Engineers, after the failure of the so-called hurricane protection system in New Orleans in 2005, one of the factors found to have been a cause of the disaster, of the failure, was the fact that the Corps chose to build so-called eye walls, which, as the name implies, are just straight up and down vertical walls, and not T-walls, which, as the name implies, would have a horizontal support for the vertical column. Eye walls are cheaper, as it turns out, except if you live in a city supposedly protected by them, in which case they're more expensive, as it turns out. So in the wake of all that, the Army Corps of Engineers rewrote its standards for building eye walls all over the nation. Yes, you may still be protected by an eye wall. Meantime, the new improved system in New Orleans never replaced the walls on the canals, those walls which catastrophically failed. They patched up the parts that actually fell down, but they didn't replace the or reinforce in any way the whole wall system. For reasons I can explain. Or you can explain. Or the Army Corps can explain. Anyway, more remediation work is being done, or was ordered, for those canals. Just 2 months after the Corps of New Orleans District finished its remediation of the outfall canals in 2011. This does not involve turning the eye walls into T-walls, but it involves some strengthening of them. But now the Corps' national office in Washington published even stricter standards for eye walls in a new engineering technical letter. In that letter, the Corps has identified 50 locations across the United States, not in New Orleans, ladies and gentlemen, across the United States with quote, potential performance concerns, unquote. Now, guys, you know those words could worry you in another context, but these are performance concerns about walls protecting cities from possible catastrophic flooding. Where? Which cities? What locations? Nope. The Corps of Engineers refuses to reveal where those walls with potential performance concerns might be located. Now, lest you think this is Corps policy on such matters, au contraire, mon frère, in 2007, also in the wake of the New Orleans disaster, the Corps of Engineers made public a list of more than 100 communities where levee systems, some built by the Corps, some not, were now believed to be not up to snuff. And it made those locations public. So they have been known to make public the location of places with possible or potential performance concerns, but not in this case. A Freedom of Information Act request has been submitted by the New Orleans activist organization levees.org has been unavailing so far. And a source has revealed to levees.org that the actual number of locations with potential performance concerns may be more than 80, not 50. So when Governor Chris Christie says, let's call in the Corps of Engineers to help fix the situation on the New Jersey coast, think twice, Jersey. Think twice. You know, take your time. Think even more than twice. Let us try, ladies and gentlemen, the saga of the United States Army Corps of Engineers. Now, from the Found Objects Department, you may have seen a reference to, you may have even heard a portion of, an audio tape released this week by the Washington Post of a conversation between then General Petraeus and a representative of Fox News, a freelancer who was working on assignment for Fox News in Afghanistan when General Petraeus was still in Afghanistan. And you may have seen what the headline was, which was that in that conversation, said representative of Fox News forwarded what she said was a suggestion by Fox News chairman Roger Ailes that if General Petraeus was offered either the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff job, if he was offered that job, he should take it. If he was offered any other job, he should turn it down and instead run for president with the support of Fox News. That was the headline, and that was what got talked about all over the media, to the extent that it was talked about at all. The entire tape, however, which runs about 12 minutes, is interesting for a number of reasons. First of all, though this tape was said to have been recorded surreptitiously, that's what the Fox News freelancer correspondent said when this all blew up, folks in the audience with an ear attuned toward engineering issues might notice this is the best recorded surreptitious recording in the history of human audio recording. Having just lived in the world of President Nixon's tapes for about the past year, I can tell you this is about the best. This is studio quality surreptitious recording, ladies and gentlemen, which makes you wonder what, why, where, who, when. No, we know when. In 2011. The rest of the questions remain unanswered, but you'll hear it. It is just, you'll have no trouble making out every single word, which can't be said for most surreptitious recordings. Secondly, the Fox correspondent's explanation for this discussion about Roger Ailes and Petraeus running for president is, we were joking around. Now, it comes at the end of the conversation, so remember to listen to see if you think it sounds like they're joking. Listen for the number of laughs. Of course, not every joker laughs. Not every joker is a red skeleton who laughs at their own joke, but still, just check it out. But third and most important, the first part of the tape lets you hear in action what a lot of journalists since the Petraeus resignation scandal erupted, what a lot of journalists who had covered Petraeus have then scampered into print to reveal, a little bit too late, but there you go, that he was a active, not to say ferociously active, spinner of journalists. And here, on tape, you can hear General Petraeus spinning a journalist. See how it works. It begins with him saying, I'm not trying to spin. I don't want spin. There's a clue. Anyway, here it is from the Found Objects Department.
I've got something to say to you, by the way, directly from Roger Ailes.
Well, with no one else in the room?
Well,
I hope.
You know, you guys have ears or your ears are dead. No, okay. Here's the... Well,
I'm
told Roger...
Well,
okay, but I'm going to tell you... Roger Ailes, I told him I was coming.
I love Roger.
I know, and he loves you, and everybody at Fox loves you. So I'm supposed to say directly from him to you, through me, is, first of all, is there anything Fox is doing right or wrong that you want to tell us to do differently?
You know, actually ask Brett Baer about this, because I actually did say that I thought, in a sense, sort of the editorial policy of Fox had shifted. Now that
on the online or on the news channel?
Well, I only watch it's your stories that are online here. But it just struck me that it was almost as if, because they're going after Obama, they had to go after Obama's war as well, actually. And I told that to Brett when he was out here.
Yeah.
That, again, some of it was headlines, but they...
Well, headlines is easy to fix, because the lady who does that is...
Well, my honest sense was that, you know, I mean, papers and news outlets have editorial policies. They know how their bosses feel about things.
And of course they do.
And it causes a certain shading.
Okay.
And, you know, with respect, for example... mean, you know, again, off the record, I mean, the New York Times is never going to give Bush or Iraq a break. I don't care.
No.
They could never
come up with a cure for cancer, and he's still...
I mean, it just was never going to happen. I remember, in fact, one time, Tom Shanker, who I think very highly of, wrote a piece, and it was on me before I was going to testify one time, and they had, and it's a pretty good piece, you know, I mean, factual, in other words. Again, all we want is the truth. We, you know, we're not out to spin. But it had this sort of really odd thing inserted in it, and it was something that had been proven unfounded, but it sort of bounced around on the MoveOn.org kind of webs. And I said, Tom, you know, where did that come from? He said, oh, that was added by the editors. So, again, I sensed, actually, you know, she asked, is there something that Fox can do better?
Yeah, this is a direct from my boss, too.
I mean, we discussed this, actually, with Brett, and you may want to spend a little more time on it with her.
I can tell you, though, that politically, that and Fox, you know, represents... I mean, as they love to say, they get a map of the United States and they cover the East Coast and they cover the West Coast. Their audience is in the middle. There, I think there is a split, which I certainly saw in the Reagan administration, where you come in, when Reagan came in as a conservative, where he had fiscal conservatives and foreign policy conservatives united.
Yeah.
And everybody was happy with that plan.
Yeah.
And then 2 years into the Reagan defense buildup, when there were questions about, do you have to choose balanced budget or defense buildup?
Yep.
The fiscal conservatives, Bob Cast and a bunch of guys in the Senate, they broke off and they said, well, defense is not exempt.
You bet.
You know, and I think so. That's what you're seeing now in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that it's a Obama reflection as much as it's a Tea Party. Is that their sense that you know, the most important thing America can do, and they always quote Hillary and they always quote Admiral Mullen saying the most important national security interest is the American economy, therefore. And so I think that's what you're seeing, and you're certainly seeing it with Bill O'Reilly.
Yeah.
And you're seeing it with some of the other anchors where they're becoming very skeptical. Like Shepard Smith is saying, oh, right, we've heard that before.
Sure.
And so I think that's it, but I don't think it's an editorial policy.
Yeah. Okay.
And it's very pro-military, remains.
It is. I mean, Bill O'Reilly has been one of them. I mean, he's stuck. You know that old saying that, actually I say it also about the three amigos, McCain, Lieberman, and Lindsey Graham. Grant used to say, there's old Sherman, you know, I stood by him while he was crazy, and he stood by me while I was drunk. And every time I see McCain, I think about that, because they stood by me when I was crazy. And so did Bill O'Reilly, actually.
Yeah. Okay.
But, you know, again, I do sense there is a little, it is, you can sense a skepticism. But the skepticism is informing the reporting to a slight degree, or the way it's being reported. And I guess that's the concern that I have, that it could sort of unduly undermine. Brett got it right, I think, when he was out here, certainly. And, you know, again, you know, judge for yourself. You're going to get out and see stuff for yourself, and you'll see how it's different from 2 years ago. I mean, the fact is that 2 years ago...
I wrote it off 2 years ago.
Marcia,
I thought it was hopeless.
Here's the Marcia. This is right after the debate and then voting. 2 years ago, Marcia was, you know, the headquarters of the Taliban and also the illegal narcotics industry. Mm-hmm. So in the market in Marcia, they sold... illegal narcotics and explosives.
In the same stall.
Yeah.
No, when I was here 2 years ago, everybody I asked, Afghan military, Afghan political NGO, what's the mission? Who's the enemy? How do you know you've won? And every single time I got different answers.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you'll find it.
And I think now it's not.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing, I know you've only got a minute left, the other thing, which is directly advice to you from Roger Ailes, is...
I'm not running.
And that's not the question at this point. He says that if you're offered chairman, take it. If you're offered anything else, don't take it. Resign in 6 months and run for president. Okay? And I know you're not running for president, but at some point when you go to New York next, you may want to just chat with Roger and Rupert
Rupert's after me.
Okay.
Look, what I have told people is that, you know, I truly want to continue to serve my country if it is in a, you know, a quite significantly meaningful position. Mm-hmm. And there's all of about two of those in the world. You all have really got to shut your mouths, or shut your, yeah, shut your mouths too.
Yeah, and I'm only reporting this back to Roger, and so, that's
well,
ideal.
And, you know, obviously the chairman would be one of them, and there might be one other, but that's about it. And I'm not going to, you know, don't want to go to NATO meetings for the rest of my life, or, you know, fight service budget battles or anything like that. So,
can I give you the gossip that I picked up about all that?
What's that?
I mean, I'm sure you'd hear better gossip than that, but I talked to some former chiefs about this very topic, and they said, well, you know, the White House is particularly nervous about, well, but they were here, and here's the thinking, that they're nervous about. They feel that Obama had this mandate, okay, the mandate, or the, in his own mind, Obama wanted to do Obamacare, which is a sixth of the economy. He wanted to do environment, which is basically controlling all aspects of the economy, and education, which is the future. So he pushed for Obamacare, got that done. They didn't anticipate 2010 results, but he now is going to lie low and be very centrist so that they win in 12 and then they get the other two. Now, what they need, and this is not from chiefs, this is from political people, and what they need to cement it so that it doesn't get reversed is a third term. And that means 2016, they need to win, the Democrats need to win, and they need to win with their guy, their kind of guy. So that then you have the stuff is locked in place for a generation. Nobody can come in like Reagan came in and reversed.
Yeah.
And that's their plan. You're their problem. And so, I know they're probably related to Asif al-Zardari, but what their plan is, but they think that if you're chairman, they can't overrule you. They can't go against whatever your advice is going to be militarily. Plus, they have a Colin Powell problem, where Colin Powell, very successful chairman, is everybody's sort of rallying point to run for an office where there's nobody that they think is in a, you know, that the group can agree.
But of course he didn't run.
But he could have.
And he wouldn't have.
And
no,
he wouldn't have, but he could have. Politically, he could have. So they look at you and they think, how can we keep him quiet? We don't want him out on the loose to potentially run in 12, and we sure don't want him in 16. We'll put him at the CIA where he can speak publicly twice a year before an open session of Congress. No backgrounders to the press, no Sunday talk shows, no speeches, no nothing. Now, I'm throwing that out as gossip, whether it's true or not, you know, whether it's a bunch of Zardaris wandering around Washington, but I've heard that from more than one person. I mean, I've heard that from some pretty significant and senior people.
Well, look, I mean, I can do math and reason as well. But, you know, an awful lot of what we do in the future, believe it or not, in Libya right now, perhaps...
Yeah.
Is what that organization can do. So
yes,
that's in, if you want to contribute. You know, I'm not out to go out and make money. I mean, the offers are unbelievable. I would have done it long ago. So it really is about serving.
So what do you want? So what do I tell Roger when he says?
Tell him I don't know what they're going to offer me anyway. I really don't.
Okay, but there are
really
only two, so I can say something along the following lines. There are potentially two jobs that you'd be interested in.
That has to be off the record.
His deal with me was that I was only supposed to talk to you.
Yeah, okay.
And my deal with you will be I sit down with him, and he is a little paranoid, so believe me, he doesn't have anybody in that room.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so.
Well, you know, so we'll see what happens. And you know, look, he gets to pick the chairman he wants and the guy he's comfortable with, and, mm-hmm. you know, that's the deal. And if they're uncomfortable with a guy who they know will be heard, then okay, so be it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's his.
But you're looking at something like the other one as potentially where you make a difference in Libya.
I think you can make a huge difference. I think that's a national asset. I think it's a treasure. I think it's a...
Libya?
No, I'm...
Oh, you mean the covert ops.
The organization. I think that organization is full of just heroes, unsung heroes, which is the way they want to be. And
I agree with you that's the Arab Spring. You lose it and win it.
You know, we're not going to go out do much more. I don't think. I mean, I was surprised we did Libya.
Oh,
I mean, we've got so, you know, if that's the extent of what we're going to do, we're going to be retrenching militarily. I mean, I think.
You mean in Libya or national?
I mean just national. I just think.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, I mean, again, you can take big budget cuts, and it's going to be, you know, all about. It's going to be the post, sort of the early 1990s kind of stuff.
Yeah, it'll be the quote peace dividend after Iraq and after Afghanistan. Yeah. It'll be the peace dividend.
But on the
Libya is a little bit of a screw up on that.
The other folks, on the other hand, I think are going to be in a growth industry.
You mean? So. Obamacare?
No, intelligence.
Oh, the bad guys.
Yeah, the intelligence community, I think, is going to be.
You mean the bad guys or our, you mean our intelligence community?
Our intelligence community. It's going to have to be. I mean, there's so
or you opt out, or you or you do what Carter did in the 1980s.
Yeah. Well, if you do that, then I say, well, it's been great to serve. And,
and then you come to Fox, and then we all sign up. No, but I mean, can I just say that? Can I just tell them that what I've suggested and that we've discussed is next time you go to New York, you're going to stop by.
I'd be happy. I would love to see him. Yeah, yeah. No, I haven't seen him in a while, so.
I think he would very much appreciate
I'd love to
conversation.
See him. Yeah.
And
he's a brilliant guy.
He is simply brilliant. I don't know if you've ever.
Tell him if I ever ran.
Okay.
But I won't.
Okay, I know.
If I ever ran, I'd take him up on his offer.
Okay. All right.
He said he would quit Fox.
I know. He's not the only
one. And bankroll it.
Bankroll it?
Or maybe I'm confusing that with Rupert. No.
Yeah, I don't think. I mean, I know Roger's, you know, he's done okay, but. No, I think the one who's bankrolling it is the big boss.
That might
The big boss is bankrolling it. Roger's going to run it, and the rest of us are going to be your in-house.
Yeah, right. Okay.
We're all set. We got the poster.
It's never going to happen. No,
it's never going to happen.
My wife would divorce me.
Right. And
I love my wife.
Tell her it's a beautiful house.
We have a beautiful house.
That's the happiest marriage.
Keep your mitts off my dressing room.
My husband and I have had a very long and happy relationship because we have completely separate
bedrooms. That's great.
Yes, that's the ticket to a happy marriage, quote General Petraeus. Ladies and gentlemen, maybe a first, a surreptitious tape recorded in stereo. And now, ladies and gentlemen, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
Chris Brown. Yes, he's apologizing again on his Instagram for some pictures he posted on his account of himself smoking marijuana. Don't worry, kids, it's legal in Washington State. As previously reported, Brown posted the pics from a smoke shop in Amsterdam, joking that it was medicinal. He actually does have a medicinal marijuana card. I apologize, but if y'all don't like it, then don't do it. It's simple, he tweeted. A Penn State sorority has apologized after a photo of members wearing sombreros and holding offensive signs circulated on the internet. One of the signs in the photo of Chi Omega Sisters says, "We'll mow lawn for weed and beer." Another reads, "I don't cut grass, I smoke it." The two women holding signs are wearing fake mustaches. Chapter President Jessica Riccardi tells campus newspaper The Daily Collegian the sisters are sorry for, quote, "portraying inappropriate and untrue stereotypes," unquote. The Penn State Pan-Hellenic Council is investigating and seeing if they can change the admission procedures of the sorority to include some girls with real mustaches. No, that's Huffington Post editorial director and MSNBC contributor Howard Fineman has apologized to Grover Norquist, head of Americans for Tax Reform, for referring to him as the Ayatollah of the Republican anti-tax movement. Norquist is married to a Palestinian Muslim. Fineman called his remark a, quote, "inadvertent slur," unquote. Yeah, make them advertent next time, Howie. Harrisburg, Pennsylvania Regional Chamber of Commerce President Dave Black apologized this week, a day after the chamber showed a racially tinged video lampooning the city's debt crisis at its annual award ceremony. Before he apologized Thursday night, several city leaders called for Black to resign from the Chamber of Commerce and from Harrisburg's Municipal Financial Recovery Advisory Committee. But he apologized. Daylon Oakland, California, the disgraced former head of an elite Northern California Drug Task Force. This is your brain on the war on drugs, is facing up to 17 years in prison after pleading guilty to stealing drugs from evidence lockers and trying to sell them. Norman Welch apologized for shaming the law enforcement community. Really? Before pleading guilty this week in federal court to charges including conspiracy to distribute marijuana and meth and theft from programs receiving government funds. He led the now defunct Contra Costa County narcotics enforcement team, an elite multi-agency unit that conducted drug raids and shut down prostitution rings. He was also indicted on charges of operating a brothel and conducting phony sting operations to rob prostitutes. Nice people doing nice things. Another law enforcement apology. The Los Angeles Police Department has apologized to the family of rapper Notorious B.I.G. for failing to warn them that it planned to make his autopsy public 15 years after his slaying. The autopsy of the rapper was made public after the LAPD okayed its release. The department blamed the snafu on an administrative error. They're still trying to find the killers or killers. The South Korean rapper Psy, whose Gangnam-style video became a viral sensation, has apologized for past anti-American tirades. This just ahead of a charity concert in Washington in which he will perform in front of President Obama and his family. The 34-year-old rapper was forced to apologize after reports emerged that he had rapped lyrics calling for American soldiers to be killed at a 2004 concert held to oppose the U.S. invasion of Iraq. In a statement, the singer said he regretted using such violent language, but said the comments were made at a time when emotions were running high over the Iraq War and the deaths of two South Korean schoolgirls who were run over by a U.S. military vehicle. Why do they hate us? They hate us Gangnam style. Another celebrity apology, kinda. Eminem's daughter, Halle Mathers, has apologized after suggesting that Taylor Swift was, quote, "whoring around," unquote. And you know the story of the two DJs in Australia who made a prank call to a hospital in England, posing as the Queen, the female member of the morning duo, managed to get connected to the suite of the Duchess of Kent, do I have that right, who is pregnant, and that prank call went viral around the world. You know that the nurse who put the call through has since committed suicide. The hospital in question has sharply rebuked the radio station in Australia, Today FM. Management has responded by suspending the two DJs and removing commercials from their air, which was a preemptive move since most of the advertisers had said, "Get us out of here." And the station has apologized. As also said, that the DJs in question are under counseling provided by the radio station.
Hello.
Hello, is this Michael? Michael Christian?
Yeah.
The Australian disc jockey?
Yeah. Who is this?
Hello, Michael. I'm Dr. Hubenden. Your station has hired me to do consulting for you, counseling for you. How are you feeling?
I'm all right.
You sound a bit depressed.
Yeah.
Would you describe yourself as depressed?
Yeah, I would describe myself as depressed, Doctor.
Right.
How come you're not here in person?
Well, that's a very depressed kind of question to ask, Michael. I have a very broad and deep practice, and it requires me to be in many places at one time. Would you like to take some steps to help yourself get out of this mood now?
Yeah, I would.
All right, what I would like you to do, you have a wash basin near where you are now,
Mike? Yeah, I do.
I would like you to go walk over there, turn on the cold water tap, and just put your head in the basin. Will you do that for me?
Yeah, Michael? I'll do it right now. Right back.
Right. Michael Christian, my patient, is back.
Right, did it.
Right. Do you feel any better, Michael?
I feel wetter.
Wetter?
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's a start.
Yeah.
Now, Michael, here's what I would like you to do.
Yeah.
I would like you... Are you listening?
Yes, I'm listening.
I would like you to... Is there a toilet near that wash basin, Michael?
Yeah, there is.
Right. Very good. I would like you to go in there and flush the toilet and put your head in the bowl. Can you do that for me, Michael?
Just in the prank call. And former governor of Alaska, Sarah Palin, apologized this week for describing some congressional Republicans as wusses or being wobbly on conservative principles in the fiscal cliff debate. Well, I guess I shouldn't call politicians names, so I apologize for calling the wobbly ones wusses, she said on, where else? Fox News. Sarah Palin, ladies and gentlemen, on her own Bridge to Nowhere.
Journey, but where do you go?
Bridge to nowhere.
I'm under your spell. If you were a tunnel, in your walls I would dwell.
Bridge to nowhere.
Please set me free.
Reverse.
You're under my
I think we'd have no time for any silliness. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this week's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide, throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through facilities of the American Forces Network, up and down the east coast of North America via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave, on the mighty 104 in Berlin, around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived. HarryShearer.com and KCRW.com. Available for your smartphone through Stitcher.com. Available as a free podcast through KCRW.com. And we just like knowing the names and locations of those facilities with potential performance questions. If you'd agree to join me then. Alrighty, would you? Thank you very much. A tip of the show, chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and Hawaii desks. Chicago in exile. Thanks, as always, to Pam Halstead. This broadcast represents itself on Twitter. Join the, by now, 78,000 followers at The Harry Shearer. This Friday at Largo at the Coronet, the Judith and Harry Christmas sing-along for benefit for the New Orleans Musicians Clinic with Richard Thompson, Jane Lynch from Glee, the monster Steve Lukather on guitar. A lot of special guests. I think tickets may still be available. Come on, join us, benefiting the New Orleans Musicians Clinic. The show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the Rubber Promise and the home of the homeless.